when the right people come together at the right moment, when they care almost as much about winning as they do about each other, they can become the best of the best.
Welcome to the best soccer show, the best soccer show in the whole world.
Here we go. It's the best soccer show post-game. USA losing to Japan. The disaster in Dusseldorf. 2-0. The Samurai Blue take down the United States. An absolutely abject performance from the U.S. men's national team. They looked terrible in those absolutely atrocious uniforms. And they looked terrible with their absolutely atrocious play. Jason Davis, Jared Dubois.
What's he saying? Look good, feel good?
Man, look, I cleared my entire morning schedule. I usually like to get a jog off. In. And it's like, what time is it out there? You're 7 o'clock in the morning.
I got a bedhead. There ain't no product in this.
Oh, man, just absolutely trash. Is there any other way to say? I mean, I know there's one positive we'll get to, Jared, and I like to look for a silver lining, but. There's so much bad here. There's so much bad.
It's a silver lining in a series of brown skid marks. Like, it's a lot of brown. It's unconvincing. It was not confident. It was a lot of lack of movement in the midfield. So many guys just refusing to check in for passes. Was it 50-some defensive giveaways in the first half?
How many hospital balls did you see played today? How many?
The turf played a role, but the turf's the same for both teams.
I think they didn't adjust. I mean, look, maybe a matter of, there's a little cameo from Nick Suberling. Maybe it's a matter of the way Japan plays. They're not as interested in possessing the ball. They were clearly pressing the United States. The U.S. was trying to play out of that pressure, and that's going to lead you to mistakes. I understand the more passes you make, the more likely you're going to misplay some of them. But my God, man. I mean, how many poor passes that led to direct Japanese chances? I'm not even talking about like, oh, you're pressed by three players and you're in a cul-de-sac and you have no way out. And obviously the United States needs to do better about presenting options. That was kind of a recurring theme here for the day. Hey, where are the options? Where are the options? But man, balls to nowhere. Weston McKennie set up the first goal for Japan. He should get an assist on that goal, right?
McKennie had an awful day today. I mean, but he's just one of series. I mean, a lot of just hopeful one-time balls where you hope a guy is going to be. Like, not getting your head up to see if there's actually the rotation has gotten to the passing lane. Just hoping that there's going to be a guy in that space. Credit to Berhalter. I think he made a good tactical move, moving Vines further up the field. But Gio Reyna, you can't be mad at Gio Reyna. He never had a helper the whole time. Sam Vines was playing so far away from him that he is having to come way into the midfield to catch the ball every once in a while. There's just a lot of things that weren't right in this game, but principal among them was the inability to deal with the Japanese press. Credit to Japan. Fantastic pressing strategy. The timing on the press. The timing on the U.S. presses was really off as well. There was
It got better in the second half, but you're
absolutely
right.
Bad. That's because Japan's, for the first 15, 20 minutes, didn't press the way that they did in the first half. Now, part of that might have been them dealing with the fact that the formation was a little bit different, but they eventually found it. The U.S. never found their press. I mean, there was weird things where you always hear about when people talk about the defensive pressure that there's triggers, right? There's a guy makes a commitment, then the rest of the team knows how to commit after that. Gio Reyna's making commitments and triggers up front, and there's no rotations behind him when he's choosing to do it. Now, maybe Gio's choosing the wrong time, but I didn't see that from Ferreira either, where like Sargent, I saw a lot more of pressure from the front. Ferreira, I didn't see that pressure from the front. I saw a lot of just falling into midfield to try to make himself available.
There's going to be a lot of like individual performances we can pick out and rip apart, and they deserve to be ripped apart. They were bad. I mean, Tyler was bad. I think he improved in the second half, but again, everybody kind of did. McKennie was bad pretty much the whole day. Luca Della Torre was a massive disappointment. Now, I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass because he's not getting any game time. Yeah. You could tell how a step slow he was. Obviously, at the international level, it's even faster. Japan plays fast. But Luka was completely off the pace of a live game. You could tell. It was just an extra beat getting the ball off his foot. And that was, again, that was true for everybody. But I think it was especially true for Luka. And it just did not work. Now, we do have open phone lines. That's what we do here on the Best Soccer Show. I have a feeling people are going to have some opinions on this. It is 717-727-2378. It's on the screen if you're watching on the YouTube or the Twitch or whatever. I will also ask, because this is in the grand tradition of the United States of Soccer, Jared, DEFCONs. We've got to be talking
DEFCON 2
about where your concern level is with one more friendly before you go to Qatar in less than 60 days. So let me get, you want to give yours before we get to the callers? You want to go callers first?
Callers first. They always get the right of passage. All right.
Let's go to Mark from Jersey. Mark, you're on the Best Soccer Show. What's up?
Guys, it's Mark Fishkin. On one.
The fish? I mean, we got the fish?
We got the fish.
We are at DEFCON 1. The morning.
Go ahead, Mark. Sorry.
I mean, Japan played the U.S. off the pitch today. I mean, they completely dominated this match. If not for the skill of Turner, this would have been a real laugher. As it is, with one more game to get ready, and yes, you know, Christian wasn't on the field today because he had a knock, but I mean, how can this result provide anything but a huge flashing red alarm klaxon that we're going to be able to do anything? I mean, I just incredibly depressing. As you guys said, balls to nowhere. Yes, Ferreira gets that header down early. Maybe it's a different story, but I mean, Japan looked wonderful. They looked free flowing. Their press was working incredibly well, and they completely took the U.S. out of the game. It was an embarrassment, and there's frankly no time to fix it. And that's why we're at DEFCON 1, my friends.
Okay,
yeah, I'm gonna take it just a little bit down from that. I'll put it at 2, mainly because for sure the USA was missing key players. Hopefully on day one against Wales, you're going to have Anthony Robinson there. You're going to have Yunus Musa in there. You're going to have Christian Pulisic in there. I think there is a possibility that some of these things improve just by those people being on the field. When you think about the complete lack of chemistry and connection between Sam Vines and Gio Reyna in the first half, I don't think you see that in a game that has Anthony Robinson in it. And honestly, that first bad ball from Aaron Long to Sam Vines, 3-4 minutes in, that's on Vines. I'm sorry. I know a lot of people want to put that on Aaron Long. That's Sam Vines not realizing that the guy was close enough to intercept. Like, Sam Vines has to step
not
to that ball.
Not checking to the ball. Right.
Not checking to the ball. So I know everyone wants to put that in Long, and there's plenty of things you can put on Long in this game. That's not one of them.
This is what I meant by we could rip apart individual performances across the board, and I don't think any of that would be, I don't know what just happened there. I don't think any of that would be wrong with individual, Aaron Long was bad, Walker Zimmerman wasn't very good, Tyler Adams was bad. I don't think any of that would be wrong. But it for me, the more troubling thing was what you're just talking about, Jared. And look, I mean, how much of a pass do you give Long and Vines considering they've never played together in that situation? How much of a pass do you give Reyna and Vines for not having any chemistry when Reyna never plays on the left side of the front line? Never. He's never done that for the United States, as far as I can remember. And Vines is new to the group and probably tentative about what he's supposed to. I mean, again, if Vines never crosses the midfield stripe in the first half, you're leaving Gio Reyna on a complete island out there. And as you said, Jared, that completely unbalances everything. Now Japan only has to focus on one side of the field, and they can press the United States into oblivion on the U.S.'s right. And, you know, I don't think Walker Zimmerman is a disaster passing the ball to the back, but if you're dealing with a press, you've got nobody checking to the ball. Weston is lethargic. Tyler is doing what he can, but even he's not sharp. You know, again, as I mentioned, everything that Luca Della Torre did was a step slow, a beat too slow. The whole thing was a disjointed mess. Mark, you got a final word?
No, I think you're 100% correct. I don't know, in 90 minutes of soccer, you take 4 shots and you don't put a single one on frame. I mean, not good enough is a massive, massive understatement. It's non-competitive. And Mark, with 90 more minutes to get it right, I'm 2026 can't get here soon enough, guys. Sorry.
Mark, as a guy that sees a player up front every week, is Tolkien better than Sam Vines right now?
Oh, God.
I mean, John Tolkien isn't ready for this level. He is a great young player. He's ready for 26, but he's, I mean, come on.
Yeah, and look, right. I mean, maybe Sam Vines isn't ready for this level, but we're out of options when there's no Jedi. So
I really think, yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks, Mark, for the call. I really think you're going to see Joe Scally get a shot at that position for the next game.
He plays, he's playing off his wrong foot in
so
that position.
So you're going to put Sam Vines in there again? Didn't you see enough?
And okay.
You're going to invert Dest?
You might have to invert Dest. Because at least you know Dest will take risks and cause the other team to respond.
Does this team need more risks? I mean, there's a lot of risky passes I saw today.
Sam Vines is a stay-at-home defender, created so many problems. Like, you're obviously like, oh, well, that's safer, right? If the Japanese come up the right side, their right side, the U.S. left, well, Sam is back there. Except it didn't work out that way because the where they pressed the ball and created their opportunities, there is space between the lines, which is another issue. Okay, let's get back to the phone calls. It's our man, Mike, from Philadelphia, so I'm going to go ahead and drop in his...
Michael Orozco Fiscal.
Maybe we could use Michael Orozco Fiscal on this team. Go ahead, Mike.
That's DEFCON 1.
It seems like anyone would be better than what we had out there today, right? I put most of this, honestly, on Greg. It looked like they just weren't prepared game plan wise at all. And Jason, I know you were saying earlier, you think they probably knew the game plan and maybe overtrained, but I mean, to me, it looks like there was just zero plan B to adapt to Japan's press. And
well, what's the plan B?
I mean, that's really
what's the plan B? You're talking about, you know, playing balls over the top to soften them up in midfield. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah. Honestly, because
you know why you can't play. You know why you can't play balls?
Not working at all. They couldn't get it past midfield.
You know why you can't play balls over the top? You can't change that plan. You don't have a guy like PFOC on the bench to put in there to do that.
Oh, well, okay, look, if you're talking about playing the ball up to a guy who's going to win it in the air or bring it down with back.
That's what we were talking about, right? Having a different look if it's one thing's not working.
But where's the – I mean, I think Zimmerman tried to do this a couple of times. There were moments when he took an opportunity to try to play long.
Sure, but Jesus Ferreira's going to win a ball in the air?
No, but that's what I'm saying. Japan, where was Japan's line? Do you have an opportunity to try to run in behind? At least to pose a threat. And again, go ahead.
There's two things that beat a press. You can play the ball long over the top, or you can break the press through dribbling. And I think a few times you saw Dest actually be able to do that. The only problem is you only have one guy out there that can do that. Gio Reyna can do it, but he's too far up the field. I mean, in terms of breaking the press,
guess who's missing the most in the midfield for that?
Yeah, Yunus Musa.
Yunus Musa
is the kind of guy that helps you break a press. And listen, you saw Adams and McKinney trying to play one-time passes to break the press at times, but they just don't have enough rotation of players around them making the movements. That's why you're seeing a lot of balls going empty into the midfield, because they're expecting a rotation to a spot, and that works when you have all the guys that you normally play with and you understand each other. There was just a disconnect in terms of the spacing and movement of the triangles.
I'm gonna come back
in
to
the
this.
Midfield.
So in addition to what Mike's saying, Danny on YouTube right here, risky passes, yes, because no one was moving the ball or finding space. Plus, Japan did a great job pressing. They're great technically. Yes, absolutely. Again, should the U.S. abandon trying to cut out lines with passes from their center backs when Japan is pressing effectively in midfield or closing down effectively in midfield? Or is it on the U.S. players to adjust to those situations to try to find those spaces? What I saw was a lot of Walker Zimmerman trying to play 30-yard balls on the ground that led to a turnover because Luca Della Torre was a beat slow, Weston McKennie was a beat slow, Jesus Ferreira was a beat slow, and they were just getting ball. They were getting beat ball side. They were
so
just getting.
Is that Zimmerman's fault or is that the midfielder's fault?
That's what I'm trying. So and I don't know that you can eliminate the field conditions as part of this, because I don't think they trusted themselves to move on that field. I saw guys slip. How does Mark McKenzie come in as a second half substitute and immediately slip? What kind of equipment issues are we dealing with? I know it's a bad field. But Japan wasn't slipping all over the place. I mean, they had a couple, but they weren't slipping all over the place. What is that? I mean, I'm not saying that that's an excuse for everything, but it has to be a factor here.
Let's put a little bit of context on the game, too. The game was never about getting a win. The game was about seeing players and trying to figure out last minute information. That's what this game's about. It's unfortunate that it's a 2-0 loss and we all are pissed. But there are things that are able to be learned out of this. For example, it's refreshing. Actually, no, it's not refreshing. It's actually stale that once again, Berhalter has to wait till a halftime conversation in the locker room to make adjustment on the field. How many times in qualifying did we see him, the plan for the first 45 minutes not work and having to adjust coming out of halftime? Well, how come couldn't tell Sam Vines, hey, move 20 yards up the field sometime in the first half? How come that couldn't happen during the game? Why'd it have to happen at halftime? Berhalter has a track record of winning second halves. Today he did not, but the team came out better coming out in the second half. But the constant cliche of this team can't come out and win the first 45 continues even a month out from the World Cup.
That is absolutely true. That is absolutely there have been times when I've had a decent first 10-15 minutes, but then immediately the energy level drops and they start getting beat to 50-50s and they start having problems connecting passes. And this is a theme. This is a running theme for this team. What kind of issue here is Berhalter missing? Mike, I think you're still there. I had some issues with the phones, but I think you're still there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm saying DEFCON 2, if only because, you know, you're missing Pulisic and Musa. I think that changes things. But more than anything, my takeaway is what Jared just said. I can get the nail on the head. They need to be able to be more nimble and adaptable, prior to halftime. They definitely did look better in the second half. So, I mean, take that for what you will, but, they got to be able to do it more on the fly.
Okay. Appreciate the call. Mike from Philly jumping in here. Lots of calls lining up. Again, pick out one more player here, Jared. I mean, you know, Berhalter made 4 halftime substitutions. He brought on 2 other players, Cardoso and Tillman. A little bit later.
You talked earlier when you opened the show, silver lining, but you never got to it. I just want to make sure. Okay. I think we both know what you're talking about, but what's your silver lining that you want to say?
Matt Turner. He's clearly the best shot stopper the U.S. has. He saved the U.S. from going down 3-4-0 in this game. I still don't think I trust him with the ball at his feet, but I don't trust Zach Steffen either. So
but that's,
I'll go
that's
with
the hardest press he's probably going to see at the World Cup. I don't think anyone's going to press the way that they did.
Certainly not the group stage. Nobody will press like that in the group stage. And by the way, if you're looking for another silver lining, it might be that none of those teams at the World Cup are going to press like that. I think England can press them in spots, but it's not going to be their philosophy from the opening whistle. I don't think Iran's going to press them that much, and I don't think Wales can afford to because I don't think Wales.
I'll make myself find one more silver lining too, and it's not a big one, but I thought Sergino Dest looked good. I thought honestly, defensively, I thought he actually looked good as well. So I think he was one of the few people that was able to move the ball a bit. I think he found combination with Aaronson and McKennie at times. I just think everything was too bunched up on that right side of in the first half. Everyone was too close together. No one could find their spacing. But I think Sergino Dest did fairly well. It's been a while since we've been able to see him with the national team.
Yeah, I imagine that right now, U.S. men's national team players and Greg Berhalter are speaking to the press. I know there are a bunch of guys covering the game there. I'm sure quotes will start trickling out. I think Morgan just sent us one that says, from Matt Turner, I just wish we had a little bit more bite about us from the start. Again, that meeting that it, look. This
how many
is
times
why
did Brett Anderson get put on his ass? How many times did we put a Japanese player on their ass?
Japan played physically, and we didn't respond to that. Now, to me, it was as my bias is coming out watching the game. I'm like, oh my god! I mean, there certainly could have been a red card on Aaronson. A foul that was committed against Aaronson. It could have been a red card given. I said in our bestie Slack, it's fine, whatever. It's a friendly. You don't want to go up a man and then have to kind of throw out the rest of that game because you have a man advantage as an analytical tool. But man, they were hard. Japan was fouling us, and we didn't respond to that challenge. Let's go to Felix in Chicago. Felix, you're on the Best Soccer Show.
Hey guys, thanks for allowing us to kind of vent here after the game. Yeah, I think one thing I wanted to kind of call about is to kind of, I think, resist against the temptation to act like, well, if this player would have been in, this player would have been in, that would have magically fixed everything. I don't think that's the case. I don't think it was an issue of tactics. I don't think it was an issue of one or two guys would have magically fixed everything. I think this was just an issue of that midfield was awful today. It reminded me in a lot of ways of the Panama game. Remember the World Cup qualifier away to Panama where the midfield, when Acosta, Musa, and was a legit, how awful they were. And if your midfield is not clicking, if your midfield isn't connecting, connecting passes, connecting lines, able to kind of break a press, able to kind of get into space and be able to kind of be an option for your center backs. Nothing is going to work. Nothing is going to matter. You know, I don't think the center backs are that bad. I know they're not a lot. Everyone's necessarily preferred choice. I don't think Aaron Long was that bad. Zimmerman wasn't that bad, but I think they were marking properly for the most part. And I don't think they were making these ridiculous boneheaded passes for the most part. You know, they had a couple, but it was,
they had poor options in front of him.
It was just,
well, you can't ask, like I said before about Walker, you can't ask your center backs to be your initial point of, you know, the initial starters of your attack, right? You can't ask them to help you build out. Ask them to make passes that will cut out lines and allow for space to be exploited, and then criticize them when some of those passes don't connect because they're not getting that help from the midfield, right, Jared? I mean, the movement is not there. The movement off the ball was just not there. How much of this is troubling for you on Weston McKennie?
I was saying the first 15 minutes, I thought he played some really nice one-touch passing to break pressure, but then he became reliant on that and just guessing on one-touch passes. You know, like, I was really, really kind of disappointed in what I saw from McKennie. Now, granted, maybe it's just not having that MMA midfield and that comfort level, but look at Del Torre. He's a good player, and he played enough with him in the bit. They all looked off. Even Tyler Adams. Like, I've watched every game, every minute he's played for Leeds this season. He hasn't had bad passing like that the entire season.
Man, there were moments. Again, this is what defies. This is why you go from just, I don't know, the system is wrong or something like that. The tactics are bad too. What is going on when Tyler Adams, you know, has a beat to make a pass and plays it directly to a Japanese player? There may be an American player beyond him, but there's a Japanese player within his line of sight, and he plays it directly into the path of the Japanese player. How do you explain that?
It's the issue of confidence for me. That's a confidence thing. Like, to take that extra half second beat and make sure your head is up and finding the pass versus just feeling like you have to get rid of the ball off your feet.
Maybe this is all about connecting passes and maintaining possession, which they certainly couldn't do under the Japanese press. But did you see, to Kevin's point here, if your midfield looks like that, you need to give him the relief to play the ball long or over the on the wings. Now, again, Ferreira wasn't making the runs to play the ball long, and he wasn't going to win balls in the air with his back to goal against a center back, right? So you don't have that option, really. You can lump the ball up there, but you're going to have it coming
I'll go further than that. Oh, go ahead.
Hold on. Do you remember a single switch of play for the United States today? Do you remember a single one?
And Gio Reyna did it. I remember one. Yeah, that's on it. And here's the thing about what we were just saying. Having that relief if you have to have the escape valve up top. It's hard to have that when Jesus Ferreira, when U.S. has the ball, is he stretching or is he checking?
He's checking.
Ferreira checks.
Checks.
When Brendan Aaronson, when checks. We have the ball, he's checking.
Checks.
What does Timothy Weah do when he's on the field?
He looks wide and high.
He stretches.
He goes wide
so
and high.
So it's not having one player in your team that's willing to do something different. So it becomes predictable for Japan.
Yes, right.
They can shorten the field.
They know what
Paris
everybody's
is checking
be on every attack. Every
Ferreira's checking.
Forward.
It makes the field smaller. It makes the passing lanes tighter. And that's what you see. Like, you have to have some players that are doing something else and getting that verticality that Berhalter talks about, which was not present today.
Not present. The degree of difficulty on connecting those passes to break through those compact areas and the press and the physicality of Japan goes so high. It goes up and up and up and up and up. And now you are just asking for trouble because the second you give the ball away, Japan is in go mode. I don't know. Let's Felix, you got one more word?
No, the only thing I would say, and it's probably to kind of build on that point, you're talking about how the verticality wasn't there, right? Because you have Aaronson and Reyna as your wings, and that's verticality. That's not their game, right? Aaronson is like this pressing machine, and Reyna is this kind of creative force, but he's not going to be making these runs in the channel and whipping these crosses into the box. And, you know, he's more looking to combine. I would say the other thing that I think really hurt too is the fact that I think a big part of the system that Greg employs is getting a lot of danger and attack out of the fullbacks, right? Creating width, whipping crosses into the box, stretching teams out. So So then you can kind of play, overload. You can combine overload. In the, right. And you weren't getting that, right? Because like you guys said, Vines was not coming out until the second half. We started to invest, I think tried to, but I don't know. I don't think Dest was great. I don't think he was bad, but I don't think really nobody was really any good besides Turner. So yeah. I think that didn't hurt either. So that didn't help either, that they weren't getting a lot of effective width out of their fullbacks. And that just kind of compounded all the problems that we kind of saw. But I know there's a lot of people on the line. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call, Felix, in Chicago. Even when we moved the show up like, 8 hours earlier in the day, completely different day of the week, Felix is here. I love it. Appreciate the call. Let's go to John from Boston. John, you're on the Best Soccer Show. What's up, man?
Well, let's start with the probably only good news. And as you said, Jason Turner established himself as the number one. Yeah, his feet are very questionable. But that's the good news. As to McKinney, Adams, who I'll call stars of the team, I'm just going to say they had a terrible day. And your star, and one star was not on the field. Who is it? For us to do anything in the World Cup, our stars have to play great games. So I'm just going to turn the page on the stars and say they will be much better come the World Cup. If they're not, we're going to be knocking out of the group.
Yeah. But you're not replacing those guys.
Quite better.
Right. We could talk about lineup, Jared. We could talk about player choice. But he's not taking McKinney. He's not taking Adams out of the lineup.
So judge them how they respond. Judge them by how they respond. What do they show against Saudi Arabia?
Right. Yeah. Well, the stars are just going to have to produce come World Cup games. Period. End of story.
I'll say one more.
But go ahead.
No, I just want to say one thing real quick. Oh. Because we're talking about the supporting cast because of stars. Johnny Cardoso is not on this level. Johnny Cardoso is not on this level. He is static in his line of his thought. He doesn't have any dynamic ideas about. He has one plan every time he has the ball. He doesn't look around for other options. It's not fast enough to play.
I would say that's fair. About he got in what did he get? 20 minutes. He and Tillman got 20 minutes. Tillman didn't look good either. Tillman didn't look on the pace either. I do wonder about dropping them into that kind of game with the limited international experience they have. You can't ask every 20 and 21-year-old to suddenly just click.
What's frustrating about bringing Tillman and bringing Cardoso as more – for Cardoso, a third number six. Mm-hmm. And with Tillman having a fourth number eight or something like that, why is Mihailović not on this team? Why is someone that can do something different not on this team?
Okay, so you just discussed how the wing play...
Pifak, Mihailović, people that do something different.
Okay, so you're just
when it's not working, you have to keep doing the same thing and just hoping it's going to change. It's not going to change. It's not working.
You can ask... players on the field change the way they play, but their instincts are to play... Yeah, can you ask a player to do something different if they're not built for that? So John, you got anything else before I let you go?
Yeah. So we have a passenger problem. Our number nine just doesn't produce. So God knows why one of the top scorers in the Bundesliga is not in this camp. That's on Greg and Greg alone. And then you have to ask, why have we spent 2 years insisting that we'll find a number nine as opposed to changing the system? The last point on the coach. Yeah, you can play out of the back nice football against low quality teams, but Japan tore us apart. We don't have the talent level to be playing out of the back, period. So he ought, not only does he, should he have a different shape so that we don't have to have a passenger called a striker, we apparently don't have. But we also need a different understanding of our talent and what system can fit with that talent. And playing out of the back against a team like Japan, which will not be the best team at the World Cup that we will see, we can't do it. So all of that's on the coach.
All right. Appreciate the call, John. Certainly down on Triple G.
And I'm starting to come around. I've heard people say this in the past, and I'm starting to come around to it. I think Berhalter coaches this team like it's a club team. Mm-hmm. It just, you don't get the reps and you don't get the time with the players to refine such a advanced system that he's trying to put into play. National teams are about who's in form and finding a way to use them. And I just don't know that he can continue to run this like a club team and make all these nuanced changes and try to make this team something when they're only going to play together every couple months. Like, you got to figure out how to make your best tools.
Look, I have no problem with aiming for the, you know, aiming for the stars, shooting for the, I have no problem with that idea. And maybe it should be your guiding light. Maybe it should be, let's get more advanced in how we play. Let's be, you know, let's be a nation that, that can play a version of the game that does rely on skill and ability rather than just sort of on our physicality, which has long been the identity of the United States. Let's lean on more than set pieces and everything
have
else.
Some physicality, for God's sakes.
But yes, but how long have we been saying, and this goes back to the earliest days of Greg Berhalter's tenure, how long have we been saying that when you choose to play just this one way, you sap the U.S. of the advantages that it has? Like, you are limiting the things that you are good at naturally, which includes, you know, the straight line speed in some cases, which includes playing direct and physical. And, you know, if you are playing into an opponent's hand, especially somebody like Japan, who's incredibly fit and incredibly technical, and you're just passing the ball around the back, and then when you do try to make a pass into midfield to cut out lines, nobody's checking. No, yeah, and they're right on top. They're right on the back of the player receiving the ball. We've got no options behind him. Or even, you know, I'm okay with, you know, again, play an entry pass, find that pass that opens up space and play it over the top. Pop a ball over the top. Play direct, but find a way to play direct that plays to your strengths, right?
Yeah. I like to take a bowl in the China shop. You need one of these guys. This is who Jermaine Jones was back in the day. This is there's guys, just those guys that are willing to disrupt. Now, Bert Aronson is that guy, but when you're paying him as a striker, you're losing that verticality that you speak of to get his tenacity into the press.
This is why, as much as I like Brendan Aaronson, and I don't think Brendan Aaronson is like, oh, you can't start him. You can't start him. But as you were just talking about with a variety, you need a variety, right? You need different approaches. You know, you need something different, right? You can't play, everybody can't play the same way. Otherwise, as you said, it gets predictable. So if you have Aaronson on the, by the way, why was it Aaronson on the right and Reyna on the left instead of the other way around?
I think they wanted to, once again, I think Berhalter is locked into a system. And I think he trusts Reyna to do what Pulisic's able to do, which is cut inside. Okay. I honestly, that's what I think. But or there's something matchup based that they were worried about on the left side. They want Aaronson to snuff out. I'm not sure. Those are the only two reasons I can see why you would do that.
Okay. I wonder if it might have been slightly better if you switched them, but I don't know. Again, both of those players are going to do what, Jared? They're going to check, right? They're going to come back to the ball. They're going to look for the space, you know, 25 yards from goal. They're going to try to play combinations. Obviously, Aaronson's bread and butter is to press teams into mistakes. But if he's talking about trying to create attacks, you know, you're losing. It's not just you're losing width, because you don't need them both to stay wide. But as we've determined, with Weah on the right, where he is a wide player, which allows Dest, especially, who likes to cut inside, you are creating problems for the defenders because they don't know where these guys are going to pop up, and that's not the case with this group. So we are talking about Berhalter basically playing into the hands of the opposing team. Was there a different approach today that could have made that difference? Before I get to the next call,
I think there's an adjustment today that could have potentially done something with that. I think he started the right players. Maybe you could say something about the Reyna and Aaronson being inverted. That was a little bit odd. I think he started the right players.
Well, he started the best options. That doesn't mean they're the right players.
But to answer your question, I mean, he could have moved Vines up the field earlier. Like, there are things that he could have done to change and unbalance and unite Gio Reyna a little bit more.
Okay, but can you do that and leave that space in behind, especially if you're not going to get rotation out of Dest? I mean, you're asking a lot of Adams in that situation, right?
So you're saying that Simon Vines couldn't push up on the left until Reggie Cannon came in the game on the other side?
I'm saying that that's obviously safer, is what I'm saying. I'm not saying that you can't do it. I'm saying that you take a risk if you do, right? Especially if Dest wants to push and play high. Now, you're putting Long and Zimmerman, rather, on an island at that point. Right. So I don't know.
Tyler Adams has the ability to cover. I mean, it's something he does all the time for us. You know, if it means getting more support into the midfield and having more options, because you're losing possession because you don't have options. The guy has one option and Japan's taking it away. Where's this, the other part point of the triangle? The other point of the triangle was missing constantly in the passing lanes.
In terms of combinations, okay, New Patch saying Sargent over Ferreira would have given more options for hold-up play. That's obviously just basically true because Sargent's a better hold-up player than Ferreira is. Mm-hmm. It's not just that. It's in combination with the other players around him, right? If you're going to play with two wide forwards who like to basically check to the ball, play in the half space, cut inside, then first of all, where are McKennie and De La Torre supposed to play unless they're dropping deeper and now you're limiting numbers and you have less, you have fewer options. If you're playing with those guys, then where is, you know, what are you getting out of your center forward? Where is he playing basically in the same space? You got a line of three guys standing at the 18-yard box waiting for something to happen. Nobody making a run. Nobody moving center back. Nobody's moving. All right, let's go to Cam in New Hampshire because I could talk myself silly. Cam, and my thoughts are over the place on a Friday morning. Cam, you're on the air. What's up?
Hey, guys. So watching this game really reminded me of that qualifier against Honduras, where in the first half, Greg totally got the lineup wrong. The team was losing at halftime. And then he made changes at the half that made the team better. Now, obviously, today we didn't get the win, but I saw bringing Sargent, taking Long out because Long was trash, and letting Vines get further up the field. I thought those were good changes that Greg made that I think need to be in the starting lineup against Saudi Arabia next week.
Well, but why does it take him a half to figure it out?
No, hold on. I think you're judging him a little bit by as if this was a World Cup group stage game. I think some of those halftime changes were always going to happen. McKenzie was always going to get a half at this.
McKenzie,
I think Gio Reyna was never going to play 90 minutes with his minutes. Some of those things were going to happen no matter what.
But they worked.
The team better. And I think that's what's important.
Sure. I mean, that's something you learned then, because this game, once again, to level set what this game is about, is to learn things about players. But the tough reality for a lot of these guys is Aaron Long had an opportunity to change critics. Did he do it? No. Did Josh Sargent show anything that makes you think that he's the guy? Nah, the guy's slipping all over the place up front. You know, like, he couldn't hold the ball up. But he didn't impress, is my thing. Like, these guys had the opportunity. Sam Vines, amazing stage to impress. Didn't impress. Like, all over the field, there were these little pockets of guys who these two games were about locking down a spot that has positional availability. And not one of them ran with it.
It's always questionable, though, to say, okay, we're going to throw you in for 45 minutes. You better make your mark if you want to be in this team.
Luckily for them, they all have another game in Spain in a couple days. We'll see if they even can do it there. But all of them started with their foot in the hole.
Yeah, that's true. Look, Kevin's saying it doesn't matter if Sargent's there to hold the ball if we're not willing to lump it up to him. You don't have to lump the ball up to your center forward to have him be effective as a hold up forward. But you do have to have guys willing to you ask a forward to play high, right? You ask him to, in some cases, depending on what you're trying to do. And again, if you have wide options and you're stretching your opponent from sideline to sideline, then you are creating space that way. You're creating space across the field. If your forward plays high, you're trying to create space underneath him, right? If Jesus Ferreira is checking back and you have no width, everybody's right there. Where do you play the ball? You lump the ball into space and hope somebody runs onto it? You're just giving the ball back to Japan that way. So again, everything was dysfunctional all across the field with the way this team was set up. And some of that is availability, right? Because Pulisic is hurt. He can't play. All right, you're missing him. Way is hurt. He can't play. You're missing him. Paul Areola's on this team. I almost think that they would have been much better off with Paul Areola on the right side because of where he plays, how he likes to play.
The only person that gets a pass in that first half for me is Gio Reyna. I think he was done dirty by the positional choices that Berhalter made. I don't think he did anything wrong. I think he was just non-existent, and it's not his fault. And it's very similar, that same part of the field. How many times have we said that about Pulisic in the exact same position? So it makes you wonder, is there something about this formation that isn't getting the best out of that left? How many times have you seen McKennie, Adams, Dest, just almost feel like they're always on the right side? like just always on the right side trying to make something happen over there. And we're waiting for Anthony Robinson to go on a looping, like a long run on the left. That's the only way we create something on the left side. This team seems to struggle to create things on the ground on the left side through combination. And yeah. I think Gio Reyna was just an unfortunate byproduct of that. He looked very similar to Christian Pulisic when he's in that same position on the field.
By the way, do you know, I'm looking at some stats here before I get back to Cam. Do you know Johnny Cardoso's actual name, his full name? Obviously, Cardoso's in there somewhere, but do you know what his name is? Okay. His name is João Lucas de Souza Cardoso. I'm just
trying too
that.
Hard. Trying too hard.
It's like he's Brazilian, man.
Kind of badass, though. I'm not going to lie. It's kind of badass.
Cam, what else you got, man?
You guys think that it would have been worse than 2-0 if Zach Steffen were in goal? Because I think it would have been. I think it would have been 3 or 4.
Yes.
I mean, and judging by the passing options in front, can you imagine the way Zach Steffen would have tried to force a pass out of the back? Like, think how bad Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie and Luca De La Torre, who are generally good passers, and they couldn't pass the ball. What would it look like if Steffen was on it? You know, and with the pressing?
Oh, man.
No, that's scary to think about.
Again, so much of this comes down to you have this set of players, and I'm not saying there's some perfect system that's going to fit everybody, but you have this set of players. And as a coach, instead of looking at this set of players and going, okay, what's the best setup? What's the best way of playing for this group? Berhalter's going, no, I want to play this way. Let me try to make these players fit this. Let me try to figure it out. Do you really think that, I mean, look, again, I don't think Walker Zimmerman's a disaster with distribution, but he's not, you know, he's not.
I think there's sometimes where he played a 30-yard pass that was pretty good, to be honest with you. And I don't always think it's on him that the other player wasn't stepping to the ball.
He's okay, right? Aaron Long's not better. He's probably worse, right? Yeah, no, but what I'm saying is we don't have Brooks and we don't have Ream. Now, Brooks could be some other reason, too, but we don't have Brooks and we don't have Ream. Because why? Because we play a high line and they're too slow. They're not athletic enough to play.
Do you feel like we played a high line today to you, Jason?
It does not, first of all. Second of all, Aaron Long is not Aaron Long pre-injury. That is 100% clear.
Fair.
Second, I mean, as much as I like Walker, he's not necessarily the fleetest of foot guy out there either. So if you're saying, well, we can't play with these older guys that are incredible with distribution because they're a liability when in space, well, why are you playing with a system that presents space then? Do you know what I'm saying? Because in this, it's not like Walker Zimmerman and Aaron Long are so much better at that you can just let that fly.
Okay, I'm going to give I'm gonna be Greg Berhalter's devil's advocate for a moment. Because why would he change that today when he's probably going to have Chris Richards at the World Cup?
I'm not talking about today. I'm talking about
We're talking about today's game, you know? So why would he make a change if he's going to have a dynamic center back in Chris Richards a month from now? And he's going to have a guy that can break lines in Anthony Robinson on the left. And he's going to have a guy in Yunus Musa that can also break lines in the midfield to combine. I'm going to play devil's advocate. Like, why not still play the same system you're going to be playing at the World Cup?
Okay.
And let other players have a chance to find their way within it.
There is something to be said for you don't change up now, 60 days away. And Miles Robinson is a factor here that I did not really consider. If he's here, it's probably better to play the way that they're playing. All right, Cam, last word.
No, have a great day. See you guys.
That's a nice last word.
Yeah, nothing left. All right, let's go. Do we want to get a Canadian's perspective on all of this,
Mr. Only if
Dubois?
He's going to gloat.
Oh, Vince, you're being ordered to gloat for some reason.
Who do they got this week? Who are they playing?
I don't know. Vince, are you in a position to gloat?
No, man. I'm anxiety ridden right now before this Qatar game.
So is that
your friendly? Is Qatar?
Yeah, and I'm very interested to see how this team does. I don't know if you guys know, but this is the first time Canada is facing non-CONCACAF opposition since Iceland in 2020 during our January camp. So this is the first time guys like Davies and David and basically most of our starters are going to be facing someone from outside North America.
Crazy. By the way, real quick, shout out to my man Taylor Rockwell, who jumped in to the comments and is watching on YouTube. Everybody loves a Total Soccer show. Of course, that's high praise. Thank you, Taylor. All right, Vince. So what did you see? I mean, being an
objective
observer
eye
of the U.S. men's national team.
I mean, you know, not fully objective. You know, you guys, I'll always have my soft spot for the U.S. But it was a couple of things. So I was watching it along with the watch along MLS Soccer was doing with Andrew Wiebe, Charlie Davies, and Michael Parkhurst. And Parkhurst brought up a really good point.
Of course he did.
And, you know, I compare this stuff to how Canada plays, but
you love him.
He was saying that midway through the first half, Zimmerman and Long must have been thinking to themselves, you know, playing out the back isn't working, but I can't just hoof it up. Like, I can't just clear the ball because that's not what like, Berhalter wants.
Mm-hmm.
But if we keep playing out the back, it's just going to keep making us look bad. And that's a problem in and of itself when your center backs are probably of two minds of, I don't want to keep playing, you know, this way because it's not working, but I also don't want to lose my spot or make my coach angry by not following the game plan, even if the game plan ultimately is just going to make me bad. And so that was something you could see that they were kind of wrestling with.
Can I jump in here real quick, Vince? Can I just jump in real quick? Because and I honestly, this is something I probably should have noted. Anybody else watching closely, how much did Japan mark Adams high up the field for them? Because obviously, if you don't have Adams to play through, it changes a lot for those center backs. And that seems to be a pretty recurring theme. If you mark out Adams, it causes huge problems for the United States because they don't have that point of you know, there's not a release valve.
And if anyone has the balls to go watch this game again, I mean, first of all, credit to you. But if you do, watch how many times that there is a option. McKennie is showing an option further up the field than Adams, but it is a slim, tight line that he's trying to show to. And if I'm Aaron Long or Walker Zimmerman, I'm not trying to thread that pass.
Like, why aren't you playing over the top to, I know this is what Vince just said, that Michael Parker's pointed out that Berhalter doesn't want him to do this, but why aren't you utilizing Weston McKennie's abilities in the air? Why aren't we playing up to Weston McKennie to at least soften up the press?
The point I'm trying to make is that McKennie is showing, but he's showing for a very, very tough pass. He's asking the defenders to have a lot of confidence in some of the positions he's taking up, showing for the ball. They're not making the pass. It's a very low likelihood.
Effort. That's about effort, right? That's about the willingness to make the run out of midfield to show for the ball in a way that allows for your center backs to feel comfortable playing it to you. And if you're making a 2-yard run with a player on your back, are they going to play that ball? Or a 2-yard run into a narrow passing lane, are they going to play that ball? Should they play that ball? And as Vince is saying, which Michael Parker's point out, they kind of feel like they have to play that ball. And now it's coming right back down your throat. Because
Japan denied the U.S. the middle of the field. It's as simple as that. They forced them to play to the outside. And when you force it to the outside, they pressed to the sideline and gave no option. So fantastic. I mean, Japan just was tactically better. 100% tactically better.
Tactically better, but also aggressive in a way that, again, this has happened to the U.S. before. It's not the first time. He keeps saying that, right? But then every time they face this, they struggle. And it's not just about like technical ability to play out of the back. It is, again, adjusting to those things in the midfield that prevent you from playing the way you want to.
It makes you wonder, to get the best out of Tyler Adams, does he need a Mark Rocca next to him? Is like, does he need that second guy there to do it?
Okay, so now we're going to talk about double pivots. Okay, if you decide to do that, how do you do that you can. You're taking a player from higher up the field and moving them back and asking them, you know.
But we're doing that anyway with our forwards.
You're right. We're dropping Ferreira into midfield and all of them, actually. All right, Vince, what else?
And you guys bring up a good point about the double pivot and, you know, Adams getting marked out of the game, essentially. I mean, look, this is and I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, you know, Canada's better because we do this or we do that. But what I noticed was it is a problem that the U.S. seems to, if it's not Musa, McKennie, and Adams, then it's like, you know, everybody's running around freaking out. You can't only be functional as a team with, you know, that midfield three. If you got to change it up, those players got to be able to adapt and function. And it seems like if it's not the MMA midfield, the midfield all of a sudden comes into question about their ability to influence the game. What I've seen with Canada, for example, is we've had changes in our midfield all throughout qualifying, but we've been able to adapt and they've looked good. And the same with our defensive lineups and everything. And this is where Herdman's preparation, I guess, differs from Berhalter's. Because let's be real, the U.S. personnel, in my opinion, is better than the Canadian personnel in defense and in midfield. But the drop in play when we lost Estacio, for example, during the January window was minuscule. And we won all three of our games, you know, playing Samuel Piette, playing a number of these guys. Whereas when I watched the U.S. play, it seems it's MMA or bust in the midfield. And I put it in the comments before, if McKinney isn't up for a game, that completely, you know, stops everything in its track, right? He needs to be up for it. And he wasn't this game. And then Luca De La Torre and Tyler Adams, you know, completely capitulated, right? And if he's not up against England, or Wales or an Iran, you know,
this is where I'll give Herdman credit, is I feel like Herdman plays an inside out versus outside in. Like, he looks at, I think Phil Herdman looks and sees, what are my best players and how do I highlight them in my tactics and my formation? Whereas Berhalter comes in with a formation and makes the players play within it. I feel is the difference there.
I also think that there's probably something to be said for the pedigree of the American players, the clubs that they're attached to in a lot of cases, obviously not all of them, but you know, this idea that the American player has ascended to a Champions League level in some cases leads you to this notion that, hey, we should play this different brand of soccer, right? This more advanced brand of soccer. And so we're going to force this because we should have the players that are comfortable playing it because they do it with their Champions League level club every week. Whereas if you're Canada, you have a couple of Champions League level players. You have a couple of very high ceiling players in Jonathan David and Alphonso Davies and the like. But you also know that like the baseline of your talent is fairly low compared to the rest of the world that it's going to the World Cup. So how do we maximize that?
Yeah, but these Champions League players aren't all playing in this 4-3-3 press formation wants to play.
I understand that, but I still think...
But what you're saying is that there's a perceived intelligence level that they should be able to adapt just because they're playing at those levels?
It's like this intoxicating idea of like, okay, where the U.S. has this kind of player, let's play this way, when you maybe still should be looking at your squad and saying, what's the most effective way with the limited time I have to train with them that maximizes our abilities and doesn't complicate what we do? And clearly, one of Herdman's best traits is that he is not prone to overcomplicating things for Canada, Vince.
Yeah.
No, yeah, absolutely. Listen, we used to play at the back, and then Milan Borjan gave up a really bad goal. And since then, the ball comes to him. He's hoofing it up. Alistair Johnson, Kamal Miller, Peter Vitoria, they know if we're under pressure, we're not going to try and be cute with it. We're just hooking it up and letting the midfield or the forward lines try and win the ball. And it feels like the U.S. doesn't want to do that. I don't know if Greg's like, it's a failure of my system if any long balls are played, which shouldn't be the case, right? These guys have the quality, you know, to win those balls. But I don't know, man. Like, Saudi Arabia, to me, is worse than Japan. So if the U.S. struggles against Saudi Arabia, then you know, I don't know, man. Listen, I've been on the Hugo Perez, the U.S. MNT train since qualifying, and post World Cup. If Greg decides he doesn't want to be there, that's a guy who I think we should look at for the U.S. personally.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Vince. By the way, I don't want to get all the way to that point. I kind of hope Greg doesn't come back. I think the Fed is probably going to think, okay, let's
maybe the U.S. isn't as deep as we think it is.
No, they're not. They're not. Look, I think this is still the most talented group the U.S. has ever had going into a World Cup, but they're green as hell, and there is depth issues in various places on the field, and that is absolutely an issue. And this is the thing. Again, you look at the across the roster. Let's say you go 30 deep with kind of these are the guys, right? If I had to pick a team to go to the World Cup, I'm picking from these 30 guys, different positional groups and the like. If you have 10 of them that can play the way Berhalter wants to play, or 8 of them that maybe can play the way the Berhalter wants to play, but the rest of them cannot or are a different level with their club sides or just are different kinds of players, you don't choose to play the way the 8 can. You choose to play the way that everybody can adapt to, right? Because you know you're going to lose guys. You know you're going to have injuries.
And I think, unfortunately, one of the things, because this team is so young, is that you don't have that second coach on the field kind of player. Where
no, there's nobody.
Like, when you had a Michael Bradley, given all the things that people may not like about Michael Bradley, he was the ability to be a second coach on the field. Claudio Reyna was the ability to be a second coach. Landon Donovan was able to be a second coach on the field.
I think you've pointed this out, that there doesn't seem to be, I mean, I'm sure there are guys that are leaders, but it doesn't feel like there's anybody that has like that Jermaine Jones edge or that Michael Bradley authority.
Who's going to take a game over and put a freaking elbow in a guy's face and say like, hey, stop pressing me. If you get this close, you're going to end up on your ass.
I mean, it's that Hardman element too, but it's something else. It's something about that.
Bite.
Captain,
there's no bite.
The real captain. All right, one more call. Let's go to Harry in New York.
Bocanegra, good point by BMR. But Bocanegra, well, another one player like that.
Yeah. Go ahead, Harry.
Gentlemen, this is I would love to say Happy Friday, but I digress. Basically, I have an issue with Berhalter. At this point, and I'm sure you guys have said, there's no leadership on this team. I feel like the players are pressing because they're still playing for a spot, which is unbelievable. I think he should just come out and say, these are my two center backs. This is my forward. This is my number 10. And just let them worry about the game because I feel they're pressing too much. Mm-hmm. And it's law of diminishing returns at this point because no one's going to be the next Valverde. I think that if you want to look at people, at least let them play 80 minutes. So he's neither doing one or the other. So I think at this point, he should just come out and say, this is my center backs, this is my forwards, and just let them gel. And whatever happens, happens. Because he's very indecisive, and I think it's starting to be a problem. And I'm also disheartened because he mentioned their character again. So it's almost as if he's trying to just cover his, you know what, and possibly put them in a position to fail and say, eh, you know, they weren't. It's them, it's not me.
Well, he mentions their age on a regular basis. He is constantly talking about their age, which is a factor, but it feels like a crutch at this point.
I feel like we need to say this. Like, this team isn't Google, okay? It doesn't need, like, no offices, no cubicles, and no titles. You know, like, we need some freaking titles on this. You know, like, who's the leader? Like, everyone's a leader on this team. Everybody's a leader. No, apparently no one is.
They have a leadership council, don't you know? They have a bunch of guys who get together.
You know what?
Give
someone a corner office and make them the CEO of this damn team and let someone run it. Because at the end of the day, there's no accountability because there's no ownership.
Well, I think age is a factor there. I think it's hard to be a 23-year-old who has that kind of gravitas with the team. I just think that's tough.
This 21st century millennial approach to leadership is not working.
Oh, stop. Don't do old man stuff. Come on. Calm down. The answer is not John Brooks, by the way, who I don't think was ever a leader in this team, and I don't think really wants to be in this team. Vince is mentioning Bedoya. You know, everybody would harp on Bedoya not being at that level anymore, and he's probably not. Would he be some – you know, we're talking about on the field. Right?
A player like that. I'm fine with saying a player like Bedoya, but I don't think Bedoya is the guy right now. I don't think he's at international level. Maybe Jordan Morris isn't either, though.
No, probably not. But I think Bedoya in the position he plays is a bigger problem if you're trying to get somebody like that on the field, right? This is the problem with the gap. The gap between the group that qualified and went to 2014 and the group that's qualified and going to 2022. The fact we didn't qualify for 2018 speaks to a gap in the talent and the abilities of this pool to have leaders. Every other country has a 28-year-old guy who's still 29, 30-year-old guy who's still a starter. They can say, that's our leader. That's our guy. At least one. And most countries that are competing for a World Cup have two or three of those players.
We still have guys that are professionals that are playing that could be that guy, but they're not playing at a level for the international game. Josie Altidore could be that player. Alejandro Bedoya could be that player. Tim Ream could be that player.
We didn't have enough of them. There just wasn't that guy. I mean,
Michael Bradley's still playing, but he's not. Like, there's a gap in leadership evolution for the U.S. national team right now.
We need a Dax McCarty who's 30% better, 25% better. I love Dax.
People are going to freak out because he's Dax McCarty, but you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
I'm not saying Dax is good enough. I'm saying we need Dax with a little bit more, right? Just a little bit
we
extra.
We need Tyler Adams four years from now.
We need Tyler Adams 4 years from now.
He's going to be that guy eventually. He's going to be that guy. But unfortunately, the only one, it's happened a couple times in the comments, Reyna is actually the guy closest to being that guy of holding people accountable on the field.
He does hold people accountable. He has that edge about him. He absolutely does.
He holds people accountable, but he's also not usually the problem when he's on the field, which
helps.
That's
true. But he's not been in the team consistently enough over the last year and a half for it to be a thing for him to be that guy.
Absolutely.
That's the problem. Yes, he's been hurt too much and you can't build that sort of identity within the team. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to be the problem.
If a midfielder in front of Chiellini messed up by not showing, he would be in his face. on the next set piece or next time he's close to them, telling them, hey, you need to move to the space. Look, like, I think need those hard-nosed players out there that are going to check people, check their peers. And I just don't see anyone checking peers out there.
Well, I think Walker will do that. The question is whether or not he has the built-up credit to be the guy who does it and have it resonate, right? Because Walker Zimmerman is, what, 27? Is he 27?
Yeah, somewhere 20, right around there.
Somewhere in there, right? Like, he's in his prime as a player. He's experienced. But 29. He's 29. Is Walker Zimmerman a guy who's been a veteran for the national team for the last 7 years? The way that, say, a Bocanegra was by the time he was 29? The way that a Gucci Onyewu was by the time he was 29? No, right? He wasn't. His time with the national team has arrived, but it's arrived a little bit later in his career. He had before 2021, he had 11 caps before 2021. He's got, you know, the bulk of his caps have come in the last 2 years.
I have this one for Richard right here in the chat. I know people are going to hate it, but Paul Arriola is a player with the personality to be the leader you're looking for.
Yeah, but I also think it's a matter of having a standing within the national team.
Yeah,
I think, you know, like Landon Donovan wasn't ever really a leader, but he was the star of the show and everybody
knew.
You'd
see him getting people's faces, though, if we had his peers' faces and they weren't putting him the right balls.
And that's what I'm saying. Like if you are in the national team, if we had had a guy who had started at 21, 22 and had built his career up and now he's 28 and he's going to the World Cup and he's a fixture. A starter. We started over, Jared. This entire team
I was
set up
for
over.
A quiet leader like Steve Cherundolo, even, who was vice captain of this team to Carlos Bocanegra for 8 years. You're like a guy who does it through discipline and an example. Like, I just don't see it. I don't see it.
All right. I think we have Harry's still there. Harry, I'll give you one last word before I let you go.
I just wish that I could, whoever is going to be on that starting lineup for the next 11, I could see them play 180 minutes, maybe even three games, and just let them gel. Whoever it is.
That's,
Rather than arguing back and forth, this guy over this guy, just pick someone and let them play and hope for the best.
I mean, I think it's also a matter of availability, right? You know, it would have been nice if Pulisic was available, because I still think he's a starter, and I think he does have a little bit of standing to call guys to call guys out.
Don't know if that's the thing, though.
It'd be nice if Weah was there. I think, you know, Weah has built up a little bit of credit within this team. I'm not saying a leader. I'm not saying that guy, but you look to him and you go, Tim Weah puts in a consistent performance. Let's give him this responsibility. No Weah, no Pulisic, still questions about the center forward position. I think if Ferreira finishes that first half headed chance, who knows? Maybe it's a very different game. There's really nothing else to say. I got to run.
By the way, that chance wasn't on Ferreira. It was just too tall for him. He was in the right place. You know, I don't think he's going to be able to finish it.
I think he probably could have timed that a little bit better.
The ball's a little bit high, but
okay. I think he could have timed it a little bit better. Maybe.
Hey, shout out to Morgan for running the phones today for us. For those of you guys who called in, you got to speak to the wonderful Morgan Tensa.
We did have somebody earlier when I mentioned the Bestie Slack say, how do I get in the Bestie Slack? You do that by joining the Patreon, patreon.com/thebestsoccershow. A couple bucks a month will get you access to the Slack, access to the bonus feed, which is usually non-soccer stuff, but occasionally we'll mix in some soccer nonsense. What else, Mr. Dubois? What else? Hit the like button on YouTube.
So I mean, if you want more of this, tune into SiriusXM on.
Are you doing a plug for me?
For sure, dude. Man. You're about to go into a whole another 3 hours of this.
Two and a half. I get two and a half today, not three.
Two and a half.
Which is a nice. That's a little bit of a grace.
Check
for
my man Jason Davis out on WNBC.
Yeah, if you do
WNBC. WNBC.
If you do have SiriusXM, you can find me on channel 157 in about 40 minutes or so talking about this game and
asking open-ended questions to the ether.
That's right. I talk to myself and then I talk to you when you call me up on the show. Jared should call. I don't know why he doesn't.
Because it's your job.
No, I wouldn't be. I'd be okay with you calling up and giving me a little bit of stick.
Someone needs to on that show.
All right. Any other business? Thanks to everybody who called. Good stuff, man. Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously bad game.
Thanks for calling in and participating on what's probably a work day for most of you. So appreciate that you guys be there. No show for us on Sunday. I've got a wedding to be to, and no post show after the next game. So this was a kind of our weekly show for you. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We wanted to be timely and be one of the first ones out there giving you guys the content and the ability to speak out after a tough game.
We will make sure that we let you know about the next show as soon as we are able to produce it. Shout out again to Morgan Tensa, to Nick Suberling, who you know, took time out of his work day to set us up and make sure the phones were going to work so that Morgan could talk
and
to all you guys.
And then abandoned us.
And then left forever. And then just jumps in the chat and says things about Brandon Vasquez. That's all he's good for. All right, we're out of here. Thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you guys very soon. Bye.
WNBC. WNBC.
The Sausage King of Chicago.
We are at DEFCON 1.
DEFCON 1.
Oh, baby! Who asked those questions?
Damn, dog, that's an approach.
The Horror Show.
What are we doing?
Get to the chopper!
Calm down, Greg, it's soccer. It's soccer.
Oh, it's incredible!
And or hello.
J. Rodius.